From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 718, Protecting Hard Drives Using BitLocker and MBAM with guest Julie Andriacola. Recorded Thursday, July 16th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Julie Andriacola, who's a senior premier field engineer with Microsoft specializing in client operating systems. And for the last 18 years, she's been working for medium to large enterprises in retail, finance, pharmaceutical, and K-12 education. Her areas of focus includes Windows 10 deployment, configuration manager, Windows security patching, application compatibility, and PowerShell scripting. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And every PFE show I've ever done on Run As, I loved, because you're out in the field, you're doing real work. They tend to be larger businesses, so you give me a scope of problem that I truly appreciate.
Good. Glad to help out. I have a passion for our community and making sure we can get the information out to folks who maybe don't have a premier field engineer.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You're rare and precious and expensive, as I recall, too. So
I've heard that.
I'm interested in thinking in terms, especially, you know, in this pandemic time where we've got often office machines now working remotely, or certainly more laptops in action than ever before. It seems to me BitLocker is only more important, that this ability to protect drives so that when hardware goes missing, we don't have as big a security exposure. Have you seen more demand? Is that a regular call for you these days?
Yes. Actually, we had a huge spike in BitLocker when people needed to move from Windows 7 to Windows 10.
Interesting.
And this whole idea of doing an upgrade in place where you're swapping out the operating systems while the machine is running, it doesn't play well with software-based encryption. So third-party products out there that are encrypting the hard drive, but they're software-based, not like BitLocker, where it's part of the operating system. So that probably produced the most energy as people were looking to get rid of that. We also did some improvements in BitLocker going into Windows 10, with some higher encryption that people were looking for. So it just made a lot of sense to stop paying for a product and use the inbox product. So that produced a huge bump in BitLocker demand, and just kind of trying to get the roadmap of how to manage all these devices that need to be encrypted.
I mean, that being said, not every version of Windows 10 has BitLocker. Is it just enterprise, or do the pros get it as well?
Oh, good question. Yeah, pro has it for sure. Mm-hmm. Home may not, but yeah. I believe all the other SKUs would have it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would have to double check on the home. The big blocker for some organizations is it's very difficult to centrally manage. Okay, I will even go as far as saying it's impossible to centrally manage BitLocker if your machines do not have a TPM chip in them. That's required for you to be able to use any of our management products associated with BitLocker recovery keys. So if a user does something or a hard drive is triggered and you see that lovely blue recovery screen that's asking for a key, if you have a TPM chip, it asks for a key. And so a help desk person can look that up for them, or a person can even we have solutions where they can even self-serve and look up their own recovery key from some working computer somewhere. But if it doesn't have a TPM chip, you're restricted to a password that the user sets. And if you are managing lots of users, that's just not.
You're in trouble.
I've gone into an organization and they all set the BitLocker password to the same thing.
So much for that. Defeats
the purpose.
Kind of, yeah. So, yeah, never mind the whole thing.
It's, So TPM is a huge part of security in Windows 10, and it really needs to be in any device for any sort of business that is interested in securing that device, because it's also comes into play with cloud and identity for that device in Azure AD and such like that. So that's kind of steering off what we're talking about today, but just to emphasize, that's kind of one of my rules for implementing and moving forward with BitLocker is to make sure your firmware is up to date, because there's been a lot of vulnerabilities within firmware, and that's also where BitLocker lives or the TPM chip and such. So you need to be updating your BIOS. It's no longer the days of don't touch that BIOS or that firmware until the machine is like broken and you're trying to fix it.
Right.
It's important nowadays to keep that up to date because it's an attack vector.
Right.
And
modern hardware, they all come with TPM now, right? Like I think you have to get to fairly old gear before you don't find a TPM chip anymore.
If you're buying enterprise class, I believe that's true. If you're a smaller organization and maybe you're going to Best Buy and buying the $400 laptop or something like that, they may not have TPM chips in them. So it just depends on kind of where you're at. I have talked to, larger organizations where they had a good chunk of their organization that did not have TPM chips.
Interesting.
And so you just have to, you can address it with, hardware upgrades and such like that. But especially with acquisitions and such like that, you may be buying someone else's problem.
And you just sort of realizing that. I've worked with companies when we went through an acquisition, started looking through the gear. It's like, and your file server is Synology. Okay. and pretty quickly, as you start doing the math on adding those machines to the management, it's like, it's cheaper to buy new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't take very long when you start looking at the time and effort to take care and feed old hardware that's coming in like that before. It's like, hey, welcome to the new company. We'll take that. And here's your new machine. Just keep that under control. And I appreciate the insight. It's like, you got to be really... You really don't want to go down the BitLocker path without TPM because at any scale at all, it's going to be unmanageable.
Yes, it becomes very, very difficult.
But fundamentally, it's just an encryption of drives, and it's not that big of a deal. It seems to not have a huge amount of performance impact these days, but either way, security is security. You need it.
Right, yeah. The 256 encryption, you will see a little bit of a hit on performance, but... Basically, all the different security agents that have been added to the machine are much bigger performance impact. So it's usually just not even noticed.
Right.
But technically, there is a bit of a performance impact with the higher level of encryption. That's why by default, it's 128 because we don't see as much of the performance hit. And that's generally considered secure enough, but a lot of organizations want the higher.
Yeah, who's going to crack this drive? Like, it's really, you get into this great conversation about, are we being specifically targeted? And I've certainly worked with organizations where they were specifically targeted and the people are actively trying to steal the machines. And how sophisticated are they to be able to crack them?
Right.
I mean, you always get into, it's like the more dangerous vector is bribing the employee to give you the password.
Yes, but you also have necessary, if you're in a regulated industry, there's an audit that has to be done. And disk encryption or the ability to prove that a lost device could not be accessed is important to a successful audit.
Right.
So that is a big motivator for a lot of organizations. Some organizations I see only do BitLocker on, mobile devices such as laptops and tablets, and then, workstations that don't leave the building aren't encrypted.
And that was an interesting moment when everybody was forced to work from home. We sent a bunch of desktop machines home. And you're like, hey, those drives aren't encrypted.
Yes, the quick move to work from home has really impacted a lot of IT. We've had more digital transformation in a month than we did over 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. But I also think now that the move has happened, and in some cases we're starting to talk about going back, at least to some degree, we're also cleaning up. And I think there is this conversation. It's one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you about this too, was that we're now saying, oh man, like, yeah, that machine went out the door, not encrypted, but we should probably encrypt it now because it's going to stay, you know, over and over again, I see they're going to continue to work from home and it's going to be hybrid. They're going to spend some days at home and some days in the office and they're not on a laptop. And every time you move a desktop machine, you risk breaking it. So you leave that machine at the home and you provide them something else in the office now.
Yep.
Can you encrypt BitLocker remotely. Like if I can VPN or remote access that machine while it's in the home, I could apply BitLocker to it.
Yeah, and Intune too. So that doesn't require any sort of VPN because that's cloud-based management.
Right.
In fact, any sort of MDM solution can use the BitLocker policies, the mobile or the modern policies to do the encryption and kick that off. There's been some caveats along the way. There were some times where some of that required the user to be an admin, and, you know, the ability to roll keys if it's been disclosed. Some of that functionality is only found in the newer versions of Windows 10. So
right.
We've continued to make that story better, for organizations that want to leverage this cloud management and have their users be standard users. So a lot of work has been going into that Intune story, because it doesn't matter where the device could be anywhere in the world, and you know its recovery key and you're able to access that information, regardless of network boundaries.
So what, this is all, in the end, encryption's fine. It's always when something goes wrong. So when do we need these encryption keys? Like, I would think most of the time we just never ever see them. Like, what causes someone to open a ticket around BitLocker? The machine just gets angry?
Yeah. So anything that's going to be triggering a change in the BIOS, and I don't want to go too deep into PCRs, but that's kind of anything that triggers a change. And we have a nice web page that kind of goes over like the common factors that will trigger BitLocker. I will say one of the things that's not on that list that I do see, back to my point about it's important to update your BIOS, is the moving from one version of Windows 10 to the next. Sometimes these feature updates, this moving to the next version, it fails because of the way that the BIOS is being handled. So that is just really important to make sure that's a part of the device management ecosystem that you're working on. Can't be ignored.
But it also means when you're testing updates, you're also making sure the machine you're testing on has got that BitLocker configuration. So you have a heads up for a particular set of hardware's reaction to that update.
Right. And you know, our management, Configuration Manager, now known as, Microsoft Endpoint Management, Configuration Manager. We love to change the names.
Yes.
We now can in inventory collect the version of the BIOS that's on, the state of the TPM chip, which is really important. I had one customer who ran into an issue, where they had the BIOS had a choice where you could prevent change of ownership for TPM. And when they upgraded to Windows 10, that put the TPM in a poor state, because in Windows 10, it is required to take ownership of that TPM. In Windows 7, that wasn't the case. So it couldn't take proper control. So the TPM was in an unhealthy state. And so that was causing a problem. And so we had to, you know, undo that BIOS setting. Now, that's a pretty edge case. I don't see that very often. But again, it's that really important connection between a healthy TPM in the device, as well as for BitLocker to work effectively.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to think in terms of what a TPM being unhealthy. It's like, well, you're happy or you're sad, one or the other. But okay, I'm not feeling that great, but. Can you detect that ahead of the patch? You just sort of go like, what is the state of the machine?
Sure. So that's Configuration Manager that's one of the things that it can inventory for you. So that's a good report to be looking at, and data in there. The other, thing would be, I mean, you can go onto a machine itself and, you know, there's a console dedicated to TPM, just like, you know, computer management or drive management. So there's a management console for TPM. So right. you can kind of see the state of the device and repair it as needed mm-hmm. and such like that. So it's not usually a big problem, but it's definitely something to be aware of. And if there is encryption involved, to make sure that you're being careful in the way that you handle that. And again, we have some articles about how to do that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I get that. And Julie, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
Working from home could be the new normal for some or all of your company. Working from home could be good for end users, but it's going to be tough on you in IT. Don't panic, you've got Policy Pack, but you're going to need a few new tricks to handle the change. So learn from Jeremy Moskowitz, 15-time Microsoft Enterprise Mobility MVP awardee and founder of Policy Pack Software. In a new webinar, you can learn practical tips and tricks for this new reality of remote work with Windows 10. You'll learn how Policy Pack keeps your Windows 10 operating system, apps, users, and browsers standardized and secure, all while removing admin rights and stopping ransomware and unknownware. Learn how Policy Pack works alongside the tech you have today, like Active Directory and Group Policy, VPN connections, and virtual desktop. And learn how Policy Pack can enhance and accelerate any future-facing plans, such as Windows Virtual Desktop, and an MDM solution such as Microsoft Endpoint Manager or VMware Workplace ONE. If handling the working from home tsunami is now on your plate, you owe it to yourself to learn a shortcut to make the transition to the remote work easier. Sign up for the webinar with Jeremy and get a jump start in handling the change with remote work. Sign up at policypack.com/remote work. That's policypack.com/remote work. Policy Pack. Securing your standards.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Julie Andriacola. And we're talking a bit about BitLocker and the fun and excitement of managing this thing at scale, too. So is there a reason to have a console to monitor BitLocker across the board? Like, this seems like a case by case, occasionally you're going to have problems. Be careful with your updates kind of thing. Other than that, it's just folks who break machines and get BitLocker warnings and getting the recovery keys.
Right. So if you don't have the recovery key, you cannot get into that drive.
Right. That drive's
gone. Those are always the saddest support cases. They're like, BitLocker's been triggered, but we didn't have the key escrowed into a management solution, which you could be escrowed into Active Directory, MBAM solution or configuration manager or Azure AD. Microsoft cannot undo that. That machine.
There isn't a back door here.
Nope, there isn't. So you are basically, you know, wipe the drive and start over again. And that's pretty painful. I've seen some, you know, executive machines that they weren't recovering. They didn't have the management in place for that recovery key, and BitLocker was triggered. And yeah, not a good thing.
Occasionally,
you can work out of it if you can figure out what triggered it. You can kind of go back to if it was a device setting or something like that, you could figure out. But that's not always the case.
Untrigger.
So yeah, it's pretty sad.
So like literally, maybe reverting the BIOS might get it to untrigger.
Well, if it was changed by something, I have seen on occasion that if you typically I see it more with docking stations,
right?
That the way that the BIOS is detecting that docking station, it sees it as a drive, and so when it's not, it becomes. If that changes and it's either attached or not attached to that docking station, sometimes that can trigger BitLocker.
Interesting.
I don't see it as much nowadays, but it a couple of years ago there was a lot more of that. So,
but it's also a statement about the way that this works. It is not like once it locks it, it's just locked and you have to jump through the hoops. It's always evaluating its state and then deciding whether to lock or not.
Right. Yep. So any detected change That's what's going to trigger that lock.
Interesting. And so occasionally you'll get it back.
Yeah, but never count on it, right?
No.
Yeah, that's why it's important to have, you know, a solution that you know is healthy, that is getting those keys and storing them in a very secure manner, right? Because
right.
This is a security, you know, boundary, and you want that to be, you need to treat those recovery keys as like a password.
Right.
Because essentially it is a password to that hardware.
So Configuration Manager, obviously a place to store them. Azure Active Directory. MBAM. Should we talk a little about MBAM? Like, this is the BitLocker administration tool.
Yes. Yeah. So that's historically been part of our, what we call software assurance, which was an additional SKU that organizations could purchase. And when they did, they got a collection of programs, and MBAM was one of them, Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Management.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what MBAM is a SQL database, and that is, behind a web server, and it's typical to have GPOs directing those recovery keys to Active Directory.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the old school. But if you change keys or things like that, you just kind of get a big list of keys in, Active Directory. So you won't know immediately which one is the right one. And there's no reporting. There's nothing just escrowing it into Active Directory that says this machine is encrypted. So what MBAM solution was is to have a small agent be running on the machine that checks in with the frequency that you set to say, hey, these are the policies for BitLocker. Are you abiding by them?
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't, I'm going to trigger that or send back a message that this machine is out of compliance.
Hmm.
And so that way you can report on that. And the web servers have portals. So either a user can self-serve, put in their credentials and get their device recovery key back. I see more commonly is kind of the help desk portal where they're going in and doing that for the user on behalf of the user and pulling that recovery key and then telling that user what that is. And the thing that when you use those portals, once those keys are disclosed, that key, message is then sent back to that MBAM client to say, okay, let's roll the keys. Time to come up with a new key. And that new key is then escrowed. So it's always, there isn't a post-it on sitting around with the BitLocker recovery
right.
key, that could be used over and over again.
The point being the recovery key works once.
Right. If you roll that key.
Right. So when you roll a key, is that something that the user has to do at that point? I mean, they've already had a bad day. They've been locked out of their machine.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't know that I want self-service for fixing this, but I do want it to be a normal process through tech support that they can clearly do it and mm-hmm. give them the key. Now they're back up. What do I got to do to roll the key? As soon as they're up, can I roll the key remotely and they're just going to have a new key? They don't need to know anything about that?
Yep. It's okay. Part of when you get that key that's marked as disclosed, and it tells the MBAM client, hey, we need a new one,
yeah.
and it takes care of it. So it's very transparent to everybody. And who got that key out of the database is also logged. So that's key when you're looking at audit reporting and such that you can have a trail of who's been accessing these keys.
Yeah. So I like that that's going through tech support, and then we have a ticket with it and where the call was and all of those sorts of things. And it's just part of the process is you disclose the key, then you roll the key. And yeah, that's very coherent to me that would be like that.
And it's simple, right? It mm-hmm. it just works. It's been working like that for years. And it's not real complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Enforcing the GPOs that you've put in place,
yep.
or checking, it's not really enforcing it, but it's checking the compliance of that. So, if a machine is out of compliance, say someone disabled BitLocker,
mm-hmm.
it would come back and That would show up in the reporting. So then it could be addressed whether the GPO is not working or the machine needs to be rebooted or whatever it is. It's been trucking right along for years and years. And then we got a whole lot, I think it was about 2 years ago. It's always tough to keep track of time these days. There was a lot of buzz about that MBAM was going out of support.
Right.
And people got really, you know, worked up about that because this was a core product for them, right? You needed those keys and there wasn't another good alternative out there. And there are third parties that do manage BitLocker keys as well. And so a lot of those folks were very much saying, oh yeah, MBAM support, it's gone. But it was mainstream support.
Okay.
So mainstream support means that we are no longer making any feature updates to it. We're not making any changes. We'll patch it if it needs a security update, mm-hmm. or you need help with it, you can still call in and get Microsoft support for it. But a lot of organizations didn't understand that difference. And so they were freaking out and they were coming back to Microsoft saying, all right, I can't use MBAM anymore, which of course was incorrect. Mm-hmm. What do I use? And we did not have a good answer for that. So that bubbled up very quickly as an important issue to address. And the decision was made that Configuration Manager would then take over those keys. And, it's fully present now in, Configuration Manager 2002. I haven't found a feature yet that's missing from the equivalent of it in MBAM. In fact, the portals that you use to get the keys still say MBAM on them. and ConfigMan installs the MBAM client for
right.
you. So they just took that product, ported it over. But we had to do it with security, right? So
right.
the encryption is there. You need a certificate. So that those keys stay in the database, because you wouldn't want that key to disappear
yeah.
if that machine like aged out, right? Because somebody puts it in the drawer and pulls it out 6 months later, BitLocker's triggered. You still need that key, whereas a lot of organizations will mark that device as inactive and delete that. But the key will stay,
right.
the recovery key, so that you're able to go back and you have the audit reports and all of that associated with it. So that was welcome news to a lot of folks.
No kidding.
Because it opened it up too further, right? Because not everyone could have that MBAM license. If you didn't have software insurance, you weren't licensed for it. So there were a lot more people that were licensed for Configuration Manager.
Yeah.
And it just made sense. It made a whole lot of sense. So the MBAM team is now part of the Configuration Manager team, and they're happily working on getting all of that playing together and being quite seamless. So it's the wizard to set up the BitLocker policies within Configuration Manager is very well done and very intuitive. There is a scroll bar, so make sure you notice that because you may be missing some settings if you don't scroll down.
Interesting.
But it just works, and so customers have been delighted about that. Now, MBAM is still in support all the way into April of 2026.
Nice.
So there's no rush to move off of MBAM and into Configuration Manager. So we've got plenty of runway. They extended that another couple of years after realizing the importance of the product.
Yeah. Well, and that reaction from the customers helps you understand, hey, okay, clearly people are depending on this.
Yep.
If I'm just coming into putting BitLocker into the system, should I, and I'm not already using Configuration Manager, although is it now Endpoint Configuration Manager? Because you're sort of rolling those things together too.
Yes, it is.
Does it make some more sense to go cloud approach? Like if you're not already committed to ConfigMan, you're more of an Intune person, could I just do everything I need to do through Azure AD?
You can, right? So you have the policies that are there. It's not, I wouldn't say the reporting is totally feature, there's not a feature match yet in Intune and reporting with MBAM.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of customers who aren't ready to make that jump because for whatever reasons they need a particular report. But it's on everybody's radar. And also, when you start to hybrid join your Windows 10 machine, as long as it's 1909 and above, if it's hybrid join, meaning that it's joined to Active Directory, as we're all very accustomed to, as well as being joined to Azure Active Directory, it will automatically escrow that key up there, and have that. So you actually kind of have it in two spots with the newer operating system if you are doing the hybrid domain join, which everyone should be doing, because it just is easy and doesn't impact the user and lets you do all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking from a tech support point of view, when you go back through that same key recovery process, recovering it from Azure AD versus recovering from MBAM, just, are there comparable consoles? Like, can I make a workflow that looks like that?
Yeah, I would say, you have to kind of be more used to the clicking in through the different blades in Intune or now what we're calling the Microsoft Endpoint Management Admin Center.
Right.
We just keep changing these names.
I do love that you as a professional are struggling with these names as much as we on the outside are. It's just like,
oh yeah, I have post-it notes with all the different things the different things are called to keep it straight.
what's it called now? It's called something.
Yes.
I mean, the good news is the internet remembers, right? I can continue to search for the old name and it leads me to the new name.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it is. It's a struggle, but it keeps us all gainfully employed. Okay, so there's that.
That's what that's about. Okay. There's the renaming strategy of business.
Exactly. You need to continue to have Microsoft support to keep the name straight.
Because I did feel like Configuration Manager is getting long in the tooth. And like, I understand you didn't want to do much with MBAM because in some respects, it was just done. It did the thing it needed to do. And other than keeping it healthy, there's nothing more to do. It's safer living inside of Configuration Manager, which is a much larger, more complex product. But even SCCM is getting old. They aren't cranking out new versions every year because it is kind of complete.
Oh, no. We get three new versions of Configuration Manager a year now.
Well, okay. But it's a different workflow.
The current branch increments three times a year. So even faster than Windows 10, which is why I can't keep up with what new features are in the latest version of Config Man. They're innovating so fast and really making that connection to cloud, providing that option so that you can choose different things if you want to manage it with cloud or if you want to manage it with your on-prem Configuration Manager. But that product's not going anywhere for a long, long time.
No. Well, and I said that wrong. They've stopped using year numbers for SCCM now because they are doing this rapid fire sort of Windows like update stream. So it's you've been referring to them all along, the version numbers for SCCM of 1910 and 2002. Like those are not years. Those are the version numbers of SCCM.
Yep.
It is amazing sort of the world as it looks right now, although we keep going back and forth of what we really want to be able to do. But SCCM, again, not going anywhere. You don't step off the SCCM pipeline either, though, because they're not doing long support dates. You don't sit on an old version. You do keep getting the new versions.
Right. Yes. So you do need to keep up, or you will fall out of support.
Right. So. And quickly, like within a year or two.
Yeah. It's like 18 months.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Double check me on the website, but
I will include links.
Got to keep up with those version changes.
Yeah. But it also speaks to the iteration rate of Windows that they go together.
Right. Yep. And then even in our cloud, so if you're working within Intune, the portal can change. I think it changes twice a month.
Yeah.
the iterations that they can do are even faster. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to make a change to your devices. The change is all handled by Microsoft. So you don't need to do anything, whether you like it or not. It's changing.
It's happening.
Yeah. So the feedback is important. The engineering groups want to hear from customers about what's great in Intune and what's not great. Mm-hmm. They want to hear what's great in ConfigMan and what's not great. They want that feedback. They have really tried to improve their listening to customers. And I think we can see it in the features that are lighting up so fast now in both of those products, and really providing the enterprise with something that is much more robust and more secure.
Mm-hmm. And actually, it seems more cost effective too. It's like this becomes easier and easier to do, and it's not as much money as it used to be because it doesn't demand the same level of infrastructure it used to demand either. It's more cloud centric.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely have more options, and really too, this, you know, this whole work from home piece, we've saw more people standing up cloud management gateways than ever, and everybody loves it. I haven't talked to a customer yet who's hated their cloud management gateway. Their update compliance numbers go right up. They're getting current inventory information. It's just the best of all worlds to have that cloud management gateway. So that has been a huge success. You don't have to have a presence in Intune. The machine doesn't even need to be hybrid joined. It just needs to have that configuration manager client on it and the policy to say, hey, you got a cloud management gateway. Look to that if you're not inside the network.
Nice.
So that's been a huge win across the board, and a great way to get started into being able to kind of leverage Azure in a simple way.
And leveraging Azure as the management of my machines, not necessarily the direct workflows, which I think is very cool.
Right. Well, with the cloud management gateway, configuration manager on-prem is still the commander in chief. It's still handing out all the instructions. It just now has a route that's easy to go through to get to machines that are outside the network. And that's that cloud management gateway. So it's just a relay station for all of these different policies and stuff. And it's a VM that lives up in Azure.
Yeah.
It's totally managed by Microsoft. You don't need to do anything past the initial setup.
Nice. And I don't need to depend on the VPN to push SCCM work through to these remote machines now. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a great insight, Julie. I really appreciate that. That's like, you want this? This is one less thing that has to go across your VPN. And it's not a small thing too.
Right.
Well, Julie, I really appreciate the insight here. I think we really walk through the modern BitLocker installation and the fact that it should be available to more folks. And it does definitely protect machines and can be managed effectively. As long as you got TPM in place, that seems to be the linchpin.
Yep. Current TPM and absolutely. And
everything else we find. Any other resources folks should be looking at? What's your favorite places to share knowledge?
Well, of course, the docs and Microsoft.com really are very encompassing. We've got some older blogs that are relevant for MBAM. There's also one of my coworkers has written an excellent blog series on how to implement BitLocker into Configuration Manager, because there's some initial setup of getting your certificates in your IIS servers and such that you need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And so he does a great job of explaining that step by step. So even if you're not super familiar with certificates, he walks you through all of that. So that's a great resource as well.
And who's that? Sorry, who's this resource?
Oh, Ken Weigand. He's another senior PFE, and he has his own blog where he's posting stuff. It's not an official Microsoft blog, but it's good stuff. Good stuff.
Hey, smart people are smart people, right? Like it's
absolutely.
Wherever we can get some help to folks, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Julie Andricola, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of fun. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.